Hi, I'm Susan Lewis from WRTI, and I'm here with Hillary Hahn to talk about her new album, Paris. Hi, Hillary.
Hi.
Your new album, Paris, is a beautiful album with a wonderful story behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it came out of an artist residency I did with Radio France, and it is really capturing this collaboration I have with the Philharmonic Orchestra of Radio France and with Miko Frank, their music director.
Well, it's called Paris because of the personal connection I understand that you have with Paris and the connection that these pieces have with Paris. Is that right?
Yeah, it's called Paris because when all was said and done and the album was complete, I looked at it and realized that everything pointed back to Paris. So the album was about Paris, even though I hadn't intended for it to have a particular theme. The orchestra is Parisian. The conductor is conductor in residence there, the music director. It came out of my Parisian artist residency. Coincidentally, all the pieces were premiered, either world premiered or significantly premiered in Paris. One of the composers is Parisian, Chausson, and the pieces are from three different centuries. The Prokofiev was premiered, Prokofiev Violin Concerto No. 1 was premiered in Paris in 1923. Prokofiev was there at the time. And he, to me, embodies the sort of Parisian artistic exchange that happened at various times throughout Paris's history with the arts. And the Raoul de Vara premiere is a posthumous premiere that we did in Paris. Raoul de Vara wrote this piece for me and the orchestra and Miko, and we found it after he died, and we knew that this was a piece that had been discussed that we did not know had been written. And so the Chausson, that composer is Parisian, but his piece was not premiered in Paris, but then when it did have a Paris premiere, the world premiere was elsewhere, but when it was premiered in Paris, that put him on the map as a composer, and it's one of his most significant works. Oh, also my violin is Parisian. So there you have it. Everything pointed back to Paris.
So when did you decide to actually put this album together? And did all three pieces come to you immediately, or did it sort of build from one work?
It's really my dream program for this collaboration. For me, it came together after our first performance in the residency. So we started the residency with some performances at music festivals, and the musicality just really had come together over the time that Miko had been music director with the orchestra. And I've been working with the orchestra since I was a teenager, and they're the only Parisian orchestra I've ever worked with. And so that's a really ongoing, long-term relationship, and I've seen them evolve and they've seen me evolve, and somehow everyone was on the same page in a really, really special way. So after that performance, of course, the whole residency was already planned. But after that performance, I then spoke with Miko on the phone and said, do you think we can put a recording together too? We wanted to make sure that Raoul de Vara would have as global an audience as possible, and we would really do right by it as far as how much we documented that premiere, because it's really, really important to document those things. And this one in particular is his final work.
It's so emotional, actually. It must have been a very emotional premiere, because the story of thinking that he was working on this work but then never finished it, and then discovering it later that he had almost finished it, and then finally getting to premiere it, must have been a different kind of an experience for you.
It was really meaningful. It definitely brought home that creativity within an individual is finite. To be premiering a piece where there's no question what is the next piece this person is going to write, yet no one has heard this piece before. It's really like receiving a letter from beyond and reading it out loud. It just is like this whole other level of premiere, because in a way it's the end of something too. It's really the end. Like, there will be no more new pieces from this composer. Every note we play is now in the world as we play it. And then the idea that at the same time, when we complete that premiere, his full body of work is there in the world to exist in complete context within itself. That's huge. So, you know, for me, it was really meaningful. And it was also very meaningful for Mikko Frank, the conductor, who is incredibly close with Ralph Tvara, like very close friends. He has played or conducted pretty much every work that Ralph Tvara wrote for orchestra with Ralph Tvara's input. And it's just really spectacular to have that opportunity. And Mikko and I really work well together. So when we talked about this recording and we were talking about what else to record, my dream pieces with this collaboration, seeing how they were Prokofiev one and Chausson poem.
They really,
and we made it happen. We fit it into the season. We made it happen.
So they were all recorded during
the residency.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Well, they complement each other, these pieces, so well. The Prokofiev is so animated. It feels magical to me when I listen to it. It really takes you away and takes you to a very different place from the other pieces. You say in the notes, I think, that Prokofiev knew that when a performer is pushing their limits, the music's dimensions are heightened. What do you mean by that?
When Prokofiev writes these works, he was such a genius composer. When he writes his music for any instrument, he seems to know what it feels like to play that instrument. There's something about the way the instrumentalist has to interact with the instrument in order to create the phrases and to create the musicality and the technique at the same time. There are moments in this concerto where the violinist is really struggling to be heard. And I always lean into that struggle because it's more existential than just balances. At that moment, that is actually part of the story. And then there are other points at which the musicality really pushes you to your limits in how delicately you can play. And that sense of suspending the bow is also part of the emotional impact of that section. There's a very physical choreography. Prokofiev worked a lot with ballet, but he also is clearly so knowledgeable about each instrument. But there's a sort of physical choreography of the performer that has a huge emotional impact on the interpretation.
Wow, that's so interesting. So when you play it, you are physically moving in a way that was choreographed?
Yeah, he doesn't write in the music that, he doesn't give instructions that you should be doing something in a certain way. He's not like saying, here you step forward and here you turn or anything like that. It's not written choreography, but by implication, the things that he has the performer doing require a physicality that enhances the way you produce tone and the way you project your sound and the way you are moving around your instrument. It all reflects back into the music.
Well, it's very exciting to have this album to listen to now.
It's so meaningful to me because I really have not worked with musicians since shortly after this album. I had a couple of weeks with orchestras in the States in this past fall, but other than that, I have not worked with other musicians this whole time. And so for me, this is really, hearing this album really brings it all back. And I'm super excited to get back out there when the time comes.
Do you ordinarily go back and listen to your recordings?
Not really. I don't normally go back and listen to my recordings, but in this case, I listen to them when they're in post-production, when I'm checking balances and, you know, acoustics and things like that, and checking the playbacks. But then once they're done, I don't tend to listen. But this time, I've kind of been in circumstances where I need to listen to them. I need to listen to these pieces. Like I did a listening party this past weekend. And so I was sitting there listening to it while I was chatting with people. And I actually really enjoy listening to this record. And I think it's partly because it really captures the feeling of being on stage with an orchestra. And there's a lot of emotion in it. And it really is about the purpose of art over the centuries to me. And so I've just been thinking a lot about that during this time when things have been shut down, but people have been reaching out in as many ways as they possibly can to each other, not just performers reaching out, but audience reaching out as well. So it really feels very vibrant to me listening to this record, and it kind of reflects where we are today as well.
Right. And the positioning of the pieces, the chanson, then the Prokofiev, then the Rotovara, is kind of takes you on this emotional journey. Do you recall what you were thinking as you played it? I guess when you're recording it, you can record them separately, but considering them together that way.
Well, in a way, this piece, this recording came out of the collaboration and the pieces. I wasn't really thinking about the playing order of the pieces when we planned the recording, because we also didn't know what the Rotovara sounded like. So, you know, Prokofiev is so dependent on the collaboration and it's so changeable. And Chausson as well can be anything, but it can't be driven interpretively by the violinist. And so it needs the orchestra. And so you can program a recording, but what I've learned from the past is that it never turns out like you think it's going to turn out. It turns out like it's supposed to turn out. So then you just, it's best if you just take what you wind up with and then see how it works in order. I had thought it maybe different order or something like that, but when I was listening to it, this is the one that reflected for me the emotional experience. And it turns out it's in chronological order. it's sort of like a travel through the musical landscape. Yeah, it kind of has everything in it.
Right, it does. And so you mentioned going forward, you always seem to be on the forefront of doing things to open doors for people and inviting people into this world. And I wondered if the pandemic had changed that or altered the way you think about how we exist as a classical music world.
I have been thinking ahead in the sense that I've been watching what people have been connecting with in virtual performances, and thinking that there must be a way to continue some of these connections into the future, even when live concerts are back. I've commissioned things that I've premiered during the pandemic. I could commission them during the pandemic as solo works to premiere during virtual concerts that I would have during the pandemic. And I really have found that there's something to be said for this human documentation of history and for seeing what we can develop during this time that can carry forward. It would be pretty easy to say, well, that was then and this is now, but I really think things should link. Like when we live through something globally, it should be a point of connection, empathy, compassion, understanding. And it's important to really inspect that and say, okay, when there was this experience happening and people reached out, what was important to them to reach out around? What really mattered to them about the arts that they didn't have access to or that they struggled to create in any form? And I think it's just fascinating as an artist to live through this time and really just live with it, like sit with it and live with it. And I feel very fortunate that I feel relatively stable in my life and I am healthy and everyone I know is healthy. So I feel very, very fortunate about that. But I spent a lot of time during the beginning of shutdown and in the months that followed and sort of continuing on, I hope indefinitely, really examining what I knew about the landscape of social justice and all sorts of issues of inclusion and equity in America. And I realized that I had not learned what I needed to learn. So I really worked on learning a lot and thinking about how I can reflect those things more in my career and be even more inclusive and really sort of make space for voices that are beautiful artistic voices that need to be seen and heard that aren't maybe so often seen and heard. And so I've been thinking about that a lot as well and making sure that my projects reflect that. There's been a lot to experience in the past year and a half, and it's not easy, but I think it's really important as artists to just constantly examine what we know, what we take for granted, how we can prepare the world that we're in for the next generation to thrive. I realized over the pandemic, I turned 40 and then I turned 41. And I was thinking the next generation is already working actually. Like when I started performing, the next generation of musicians wasn't born. I was performing when I was 12, you know, and then I saw them come to concerts as students. And then I saw them become music majors and I saw them start to give concerts like concerto competitions with, you know, they would win concerto competitions, then play with their local orchestra. And now they're graduating and they're starting a performance career. And that world looks so different from when I started my career. So it's important to ask ourselves, you know, are we doing our best to prepare this world for the next generation of musicians that really wants to be heard and has worked so hard to get to this point? And then once we've done that, their job would be to be ready and walk into this world that we've prepared and then do the same thing on their part for the next generation.
It's very interesting to hear your thoughts, because I know you're always, I mean, even before the pandemic, as you just always seem to be someone who is trying to have art reflect life and mm-hmm. life incorporate art. So thanks mm-hmm. so much, Hillary. It's really nice to
thank
talk.
Thank you. And
congratulations on the album. I look forward to hearing about your new projects.
Thank you so much.